and welcome in once again. This is the No Noise Podcast. We have a special show for you guys today. A little bit of a season wrap-up, but we also have a new coach on the campus of the University of Alabama. And we also have Luke Ratliff in studio with us
to
discuss
the myth,
the season, the
legend,
new hire, everything, whatever he wants to get into.
I am lit today.
We'll let him take us off the rails.
When Luke comes in, it's my favorite day. I'm not even going to lie.
It's always a
great
time.
I can only listen to you for so much, James, before you know.
Wow.
Luke just brings, Luke just helps. Luke just helps.
He does. He does help. I don't have to hear all your opinions the whole show.
You get to listen to my reheated takes.
I love it.
It's great.
I love it.
But guys, it's great to be here. You know, I've always said anytime I get the opportunity to come on the No Noise Podcast, I just jump at that opportunity, you know. I cancel. I'm a busy man. I got things going on 24/7, as y'all know. So I just clear my schedule.
Most popular man on campus.
I clear my schedule and just make room to do this.
You know who doesn't clear their schedule for the podcast?
Got the ninja's phone
number. Hunter Johnson. We could not get him on today, but
fake fan.
I don't know about that, but we're gonna have to get him in here. Peer pressure him onto the show. That's what I like to do to get guests. So let's talk. Of course, just off the top, the Nate Oates hiring, the Nate Oates press conference, of course, was today. Huge, huge deal on the University of Alabama campus. Luke, I know you were at the hangar last night. Why don't you tell us about that scene?
Well, that was cool. A group of students, there wasn't many of us. I'd say somewhere between 7 and 200 students there. We got there, and about 30 minutes before the plane landed, and the news media was there as well, and it was awesome. It was awesome. Somebody there actually found somehow the plane on the way back to Tuscaloosa from Buffalo, and we tracked it all the way from about Chattanooga to Tuscaloosa, and that was cool. Coach Oates got off the plane with his family in tow and came over, and first thing he did, first steps in Tuscaloosa, came over and greeted the students that were there to see him. That was awesome. This guy, I got a good feeling about him. I got a really good feeling about Nate Oates. He's an awesome man, family man. He's an even better coach.
Look, from the things I heard from the press conference, we are in for a treat for the next 5 years. I am ready. I won't even be here, and I'm probably still going to find a way to come to these games. I am ready for this guy.
Yeah, and I was at the press conference. It was a great presser. He really went up there, and what I respected the most about his section of the press conference, of course, you had Stuart Bell and Greg Byrne go on before him, but when he got up on stage, he didn't have a piece of paper.
Nope.
He didn't have a script. He didn't even think out what he was going to say. He was sitting there at that podium, and he was talking and just giving you his thoughts in that moment about being at the University of Alabama.
He seemed very grateful, very humble. It's a 180 from when Avery came here about 4 years ago. I mean, I love Avery Johnson. I'm not going to no disrespect at all, but, you know, the humbleness was something that we didn't see from Avery. Avery felt like he belonged the second that he stepped in the room, or actually probably belonged a little bit more than most people. This guy, he was humble from the get-go. He's like, oh, just thank you for letting me have this opportunity. I'm so happy to be here. You know, Southern hospitality, the whole shebang. You know,
right.
I'm just a guy from a high school, and I'm just happy to be coaching in an SEC school.
Right, and he'll give you that, but he'll also turn around and let you know that he is the best coach.
That's what I love. I love a coach who is humble, but then behind the media to his players, I'm the best thing that you're going
to
see.
Even to the media when he needs to. We saw that I posted the clip from his discussion on CBS Sports before his matchup with Arizona State, and he said, in my humble opinion, we're just better than everyone else, talking about his coaching staff. And I really respect that. I think it's great to go out there, give those firebomb like quotes, and then also back it up by being a good guy around the media, around the fans, and show that, yeah, you can get people fired up when you need, but you can also be real.
I love this guy. I really do. I'm not going to say that I didn't expect to get Nate Oates when this whole coaching search started, because, as we all know, he signed an extension last week or the week before with Buffalo. And I'm not going to say I wrote him off the board completely, but I didn't necessarily completely expecting Greg Byrne to go get them, but I'm so glad he did. I'm so glad Greg Byrne.
Ninja strikes again.
The ninja, Greg Byrne. I'm so glad he went and got us a coach like Nate Oates. He's really awesome coach.
We gotta give credit. We gotta give credit to Greg Byrne right now. This
we
man,
do. This, his track record speaks for itself.
This
on hiring.
Man's the best AD in the country. I swear,
far and away.
Oh my gosh,
far and away.
How good of an AD do you have to convince somebody who just signed an extension at his old at his school where his wife was fighting cancer and she's fought and beat
she's
it
in
there.
Remission now?
You know, yep. Comfortable, happy. You know, family man has a house. The kids are happy with the area.
They got good chicken wings there.
Good. It's not. You know, it's not Southern chicken wings, but you know, it's chicken. But I'm just saying, he's set up. He's happy. He's good. He's secure mm-hmm. in his environment. And in 18 hours, convince him. You know, Tuscaloosa's not that bad.
Right, and he seems
how
not,
good of an AD do you have to.
He's awesome.
Not that even, is a great
not
salesman.
Not even not that bad. He seems to love the thought of moving to Tuscaloosa.
He does. He's really, really like genuinely fired up about being in Tuscaloosa.
And he talked about being a basketball junkie as well as a football fanatic. And he just seen you could see him glancing back at Nick Saban in the back of the in the back of the room. He said he got a tour of the stadium, and that just blew him away. So I think. He's really just taking it all in. It's got to be a shock to go from coaching at Buffalo on what Monday he gets off a plane and says he has a voicemail from Greg Byrne, and then to be announced and touring the University of Alabama on Thursday. It's got to be a quick turnaround.
He's a Southern man at heart, though. I will tell you that. He drives a pickup truck.
He does.
His wife loves to garden.
Well, he said himself he's a
so
real
nice,
blue-collar man.
Blue-collar man yeah. With a blue-collar program.
That's right.
See,
that's
but
what he wants.
When I was listening to some people break down this team, or his teams at least, I heard them say, we talk about blue collar, and yes, they have that blue collar vibe, but it's not a blue collar team. They've got a blue collar swag. And I think that's a good distinction there where they're going to get down and dirty, but they're going to be hyped up while doing it. Kind of that grit and grind mentality that I fell in love with. Watching basketball in Memphis, and I think I'm so excited to see what's going
to
happen.
I feel like that's the way we all just kind of fell in love with the game of basketball, to be honest with you, is seeing people, you know, show that emotion, that grit, that grind, that effort, that passion when they play the game. For me, it was Kevin Garnett. That was my first, like, real introduction to basketball.
Yeah.
And watching him play – whoo, you know, talk about top-notch competitor. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why we love basketball so much is we can see the emotion in players' faces, unlike in most other sports. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like in baseball, you know, you can see it sometimes, but it's very rare. They're usually mostly composed 90% of the time. And in football, they have the helmet mask on. You don't see it until they get over to the bench, and then 90% of the time the camera's not on them. They're on the field. So in basketball, it's like the one true place where a player can let that passion show
That's right.
and let it be known to everybody that's in attendance. This is how I feel about it.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with all the things you said there. But
that doesn't happen very often.
Talking to Nate Oates, yeah, it does not. Talking to Nate Oates, what really impressed me, of course, the press conference was great. But it was when we got into the media room and that round table that we had at the conference room and just talking with the media, talking with the writers who were there to talk to him, he was genuine in all of his answers. He wasn't giving the political speech that you sometimes get from coaches. He was pretty direct in everything he was giving us. You know, if it was something that he couldn't drop names on, he wouldn't do that. But outside of, you know, leaving out names, he was telling us what he was thinking and how he wanted to get things done. And I think that that's something that's great for the program because it means you're going to get real content out to the fans.
That's right.
And when the fans have real content, they're going to get behind what's happening at Coleman Coliseum. I think that's something that can't be understated and a big part of what's going to make him successful here at the University of Alabama. But I want to talk real quick about something that Greg Byrne said on his way out of the media room.
Mm-hmm.
He emphasized over and over again in just a few steps out of the room that the Crimson Standard plan is fluid and that it might not look the same on August of 2017 in August of 2018, even August of 2019, it might start to look different. Now, he did not promise any reordering or change to the plans, but he was very adamant that it is a fluid system.
That's interesting.
So what are your takeaways from that news?
There's a reason Greg Byrne has said everything. There was a reason in the press conference he said everything he said
about... He described Nate Oates.
He described Nate Oates with his coach. All right, there's a reason he says everything. There's a reason why he's told everybody, hey, if it's not for me, it's not legit. Okay, mm-hmm. When he talked about coaching search, Greg Byrne is very meticulous in every single word he puts out there. So what that tells me is that Brian Denny might be looking the same for just maybe 1 year longer. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if they decided to move Coleman up ahead of time, especially if he can get it. If Nate Oates can get this around in 1 year, a good like in the tournament the first year, I wouldn't be shocked.
I'm so excited, guys.
You're going to finally get your student section.
I'm so excited.
You might get your student section as a student.
I'm so excited because
you might be 5 feet from Bruce Pearl. Look at that. There you go.
I'm so excited. You have no clue.
He's not rotund.
But no, seriously, this is like if what Greg Byrne was speculating was maybe, and this is just speculation.
This is not
matter
Greg
of fact.
Byrne.
I want to make
hints.
The audience know that this is not matter of fact.
This is just Greg Byrne kind of playing with the media, toying with them as he walks out of the room. And whether that means that he just wants to give us something to talk about or whether it's something that's happening, that'll be yet to be seen, but he did say that there will be updates on the Crimson Standard and the funding and all of where they're at in June. So we've got a couple months.
I'll say this. I would not be surprised in the least bit if part of getting a new coach like Nate Oates, part of him coming here was maybe pushing the plans for Coleman Coliseum, pushing them up a little bit, maybe the next season, maybe the season after that, but setting a concrete date for when those renovations to Coleman Coliseum are going to happen. I would not be surprised in the least bit if that were the case here. And quite frankly, it's long overdue.
It really is.
It's long overdue.
I think
overdue.
We discussed this last time you were on the podcast. We discussed the Crimson Standard and how it was going to be great for the program because of the needed renovations.
It's so needed, and it helps. And you look around the conference here in the SEC, and you look at when other people other schools have hired a new coach, like when Tennessee hired Rick Barnes, when Auburn hired Bruce Pearl. They had plans in place to get themselves not only a new arena or a renovated arena, but to get new facilities and go all in on
you
basketball.
Look at Florida, too, with Mike
in
White.
In Florida,
they
yes.
did the O-Dome.
That's right. And it means so much to a program in terms of recruiting, in terms of the product you're able to put on the floor, to have brand new facilities and have a new energy around the program. And I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit if this is going to be pushed up.
Right, and here's something that was dropped to me by someone who runs in these circles with some of these Crimson Standard
people. Is this source information?
This is some source information
here. Here we go.
I've got some source information that...
This is breaking news,
actually.
He's the
king of this guy.
My sources, but one of my sources that is... involved with those in the circle of the Crimson Standard, you know, those people who have the money to influence things, said that the way that this will get done won't be through pushing it up the list. The way it will be done, if it happens, is through designating funds. The way that it will happen is the athletic department will give these donors the option to designate their funds towards the Coleman Coliseum renovation. And if a certain amount is designated to it out of the total funding that they have, then they won't have any choice but to do that. Yeah. Because
just go ahead and start
you have
because
the funding
you have
for
the money,
it,
yeah.
And you don't have the funding for whatever else is on the list. And so that's the way that I've heard this will be done more than likely if it gets done.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hearing, and that's a great way to get it done. If you're the athletic department, you don't have to go back on your word and change the order if you're, you know, but you still get done what needs to be done mm-hmm. on campus in my opinion, the order it should be done.
That's right.
Yeah, you definitely in my opinion, you definitely need to do Coleman first and then Brian Denny second, because Brian Denny still looks beautiful.
Right.
As it stands right mm-hmm. now, you know.
I mean, really,
no fan is complaining about the condition right. of Brian Denny Stadium.
The only changes are the prices of the food there.
The only changes that we're looking at
are just the boxes and where they're positioned and
how
many there
are. And that doesn't even affect us.
Right. I mean, well, it affects the people who have the money to pay for these things. That's the only concern that you have with that. But it is definitely the Coleman Coliseum renovation, I think, will generate more revenue than the
– and help everybody.
That's right. The only concerns, getting back to this, the only concerns I have or complaints I have with Bryant Denny Stadium is that I can't send out a tweet or a text.
There is no service in there.
Fix that. That's easier to fix than blowing it all up.
You need to talk to AT&T.
That
is
really
talk to your local phone provider. Yeah. I get 3 bars in Bryant Denny. I'm with Verizon.
Must be nice.
I'm on T-Mobile, and I might as well just throw my phone out on the field.
Also got the Wi-Fi.
Oh. On the Wi-Fi, that's what you got
to
do.
Not to brag.
You got to get on those Wi-Fi networks there at the stadium and the arena.
Not to brag.
But before we go any further with Nate Oates' talk or with the future of the program, I do want to take a minute. This is our first podcast since the end of the year, and so I want to review the season, get you guys' thoughts on where did things go wrong, maybe what could have prevented it, what were the highlights, you know, just kind of hit it all. Mm-hmm. And I think the first highlight, of course, for me would be Kyra Lewis's play and how he showed up as a freshman who should have still been in high school and just showing up and really balling out and putting his name out there on the national scale even. Mm-hmm. People were on notice. They obviously, the main thing they talk about is his age, but they only talk about his age because he's so good.
That's right.
And so I think that was probably the biggest positive that I saw, and of course he's in the portal now, so
I'm not worried about it.
We're gonna have to try to do everything we can to recruit him back here and make sure he stays so that we can get more of what he can offer and see him in this new Nate Oates system, which I'm very excited about the prospect of running just up and down the court. I think Kyra's very fast, yeah. And built for that.
I told you, whoever comes in, they're going to have to be running. Go ahead and get the water. Go ahead and start hitting the weight room, because you're going to start losing a lot of weight, and you need to put it back on in muscle.
Oh, yeah.
We are running up and down this floor, okay? I'm just saying, that's just something I just want to put out there.
I think
have four highlights from this season. I have four of them.
All right.
First name, Kyra Lewis.
Of course.
What a player.
Yeah.
What a monster. Number two, Dante Hall. What a way to go out. Senior year, he played phenomenal. He played with his heart on his sleeve. Mm-hmm. I loved everything Dante Hall brought us, and I wish he had so many more opportunities. Number three, I want to give a shout-out to Alex Reese for coming back from his injury and actually contributing to the team down the stretch. Alex Reese is a phenomenal player, and I look to see him kind of shoot upwards. Again,
you're going to hear his name
in our
preview of next season, I can guarantee
especially
you,
with this offense coming in. Okay, but my thing is, I want to see him. He lost a lot of weight last year to get into shape to be a good stretch four. I want to see him put back on like maybe 10 or 15 more pounds in muscle and kind of work his way on being a stretch four, maybe a possible small ball five. I think that would be perfect. Alex Reese, and you can just spread that floor, and it would –
just
money.
Go watch some ball movement videos of the Buffalo program, and
it's phenomenal.
Alex Reese is going to
He's going to flourish.
That's right.
And number five, Riley Norris. I know he missed two very important shots this season. One against Norfolk State, and then he had the turnover. It was against LSU, I want to say. He's had two very bad moments in his senior year, but God dang, if those are your bad moments, then you still had a pretty good career.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
And I don't even put that Norfolk State game.
I don't put that on him at all. That's
a low percentage shot, no matter when in the game it is. And
yeah,
just to,
it was a bad shot. He just had to take, and he almost got it in.
To put a loss on one shot at the end.
I would never do that on a player.
Less than a 50% chance it goes in, no matter where he shoots from. To put the whole game on that is just, I don't understand that at all. I try to stick by this, and I tweeted it out, so it's my word now. I got to stick to it, that you never blame the player who took the final shot for the loss, because it's not supposed to go in statistically when he takes it. But then that was tested, let me tell you, when that game in the tournament where get a last-second look in the corner at a three.
There's two teams I should have lost.
And missed by about 8 feet to the right. And I said, now I'm not going to blame him. I'm not going to blame him.
But that was.
But you got to get it closer to the rim.
Yeah, you got to at least blank off rim. You got to at least hear, like, the stadium's quiet at that point. So they're just letting you work. You got to at least hear the dunk, you know, right there. Yeah. Like, you got to at least get that.
Yeah, well, for reference, this is a. We're talking about the
Auburn
versus the Mexico State.
That's the
in the first round of the NCAA tournament in Salt Lake City.
Let's not forget Duke UCF as well.
That's right. Yeah. Well, you know, too, I laughed out loud when this happened, because we go back to that. This guy from New Mexico State, and we're getting way off track, but this guy from New Mexico State.
We're just going to let you take us down this path.
Oh, dude. He had, like, okay, so.
It was perfect.
Auburn had to do maybe four or five really dumb things in the last 2 minutes of that game to lose.
Yes.
Right. And they did three.
Yes.
They did three. This guy, Queen, or whatever his name was, from New Mexico State, had maybe the most open look out of bounds I've ever seen in my life to win a game.
See, look.
And he just blew it.
It's so many things that added up.
It was laughable.
It was so many things that added up. I'm not even going to blame him on the missed three-pointer. I'm mad at the guy who missed the free throw. Because he had three free throws, and he missed two of them.
Hey,
man. Come on,
man. Those Auburn guys. Now,
Dante at least is going to hit two of them. Come on now.
We're talking about this Auburn team, and they might make it deep in this tournament. But let me tell you, when it comes down to the last few seconds of a game, Bryce Brown is not about it. He melted under that pressure in that New Mexico State game with those turnovers.
He was lucky Kansas.
Jared Harper, too.
They're very lucky Kansas was not the same team this year.
Yeah. I mean, that game was just a massacre.
Back
but, yeah, let's get back on track.
Anyways, Norris was my fourth
highlight.
Let's get
Luke's review of Alabama's season.
The highlights.
This season, you know, it didn't end the way we wanted it to, but it was awesome for me. I mean, it was really cool. In retrospect, a lot of things happened. Just from a fan's perspective or a student's perspective. We led a revolution. The students took back the Crimson Chaos in some capacity. We had great student turnout. We had, we played when we beat Mississippi State in January 22nd in Coleman Coliseum. We had 2,500 students in the student section that night on a Tuesday night at 8:30. That's amazing. That's amazing to me because, number one, we only see roughly 2,300 students in the student section, and we had 2,500 there, and everybody in that gym was invested.
Yeah, it was involved.
Involved in that product on the court, and that was great for me. But highlight for me, beating Kentucky.
Yeah, that was my second one on the list.
That was so cool.
I can't even say that. I miss the Kentucky game every year for one reason or another.
Keep missing it.
And I was right. Like, I miss it every single year for one reason or another, and it's always an important reason why I miss the Kentucky game. And this would be the one time where it was like, logistically, I just couldn't get here in time. Mm. I had no other reason, just logistically, I couldn't get here in time. And I was like, oh, dang, the student section is going to be filled. I'm not going to be able to get a seat or a stand. And then I just couldn't get it in on time. And I was like, you know what? Watch them actually win the one time where, like, I could get there late, but, like, I still wouldn't be able to get in, you know? Here it is, you know?
Three years
of waiting. This is what Auburn's fan feels being winning the Iron Bowl every 4 years. I like this feeling.
And let me tell you, one of my others that it wasn't a highlight at the time, and nobody really blinked at it. They, of course, recognized the greatness.
Mm-hmm.
But beating Ja Morant
Oh, yeah.
Just him alone. Like, forget the team. Like, I mean, obviously that Murray State team is
dropped 38
good.
On us.
And that center, I'm a big fan of his. I mean, he reminds me of – yeah.
Cowart. Let me tell you about this Cowart guy.
Oh, he is my favorite.
This Cowart guy is only good – and boy, this is a take as it comes out. This Cowart guy is not good at all. He's only good because
he feeds
off of Ja Morant. And it helps too. He's lost, you know, 40 pounds since the beginning of the season.
This guy's incredible.
But this guy, he waits under the basket for Ja Morant just to hand off the ball. He makes a layup.
Hey, look, Steven Adams has a good career doing with Russell Westbrook.
But let me tell you, this guy is not afraid for a big guy in there at the center position. If Ja doesn't come take the ball from him, he will dribble it down the court himself, and he is not afraid to hit you with a crossover, put it between his legs. I mean, he'll take a step back on you if you let him. This guy, mm-hmm. I mean, he reminds me so much of just playing pickup in the gym in inner city Memphis. Just like you always have the one guy. The way he was described to me by one person was, he's your typical high school center.
John Morant.
I thought it was great.
John Morant, though, it was awesome getting to watch that Murray State team. And, like, I feel like we knew before everyone else how great John Morant and that Murray State team could be. You know, they won the tournament game against Marquette. Was it Marquette?
It was Marquette.
Marquette. And I watched that game. I don't know why I was struggling to get the team right, but that's great. I'm watching him in person. I remember sitting in warm-ups before the game just yelling at John Morant, just saying, "We respect you. We respect you so much." And it was great. He reminds me so much of he's like Derrick Rose with a jump shot and good ACT scores.
Hey, don't be coming at my city like that. Don't be coming at my city.
That was good. That was good. I give him that one.
Hey,
but that Derrick Rose comparison, I mean, is he wrong, though?
Hey, no.
Is he wrong, though?
I do think he's got a lot of Derrick Rose and a lot of Russell Westbrook
He's got a lot of old Derrick Rose in him, where he has the moves down low that he can get whatever he wants. He has the explosiveness, but he has –
I've compared him a
little
more –
He's better than Westbrook, in my opinion, because he has more of a jump shot.
And that's what – I've compared him to a Russell Westbrook with a jump shot is what I've said, because I think Russ was – that scrawny kid in college, and Ja's got some strength that Russell didn't have in college, but Ja is still very thin despite his strength. And so I think once he puts on some muscle in the NBA, the way you know he's going to, hitting those weights, I think he's going to look a lot like Russell Westbrook in the way he plays.
Well,
but
hopefully
with that jump shot that he has. Derrick Rose was a little bit bigger of a guy. So I definitely, the athleticism, I see it 100%.
Ja Morant, you are always welcome in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
You are.
Just say that.
Always.
We respect good play here in Tuscaloosa. If you're an opponent and you have good play, regardless of what sport you're in, you are welcome here because we respect you. It's when you don't have good play, like that dude from Ole Miss, that's when you just don't even need to show up to the party because we're going to remind you about it.
His name is Brian Tyree.
How you going to drop 30, your name is Tyree, and then you only drop 12? Like, what kind of nonsense is that?
For everyone listening, before Alabama played Ole Miss and beat them by 22 points earlier this year,
there was
a scrum in pregame. Was it a tussle, a scrum, a brouhaha?
What would you say, Trevin?
It was a punking. What do you
a
mean?
Punking.
Oh,
a punking.
Oh,
was a punking.
Another one.
That's a little bit severe.
I mean, because I'm just going to be honest with you. Ole Miss got punked. They tried their best, but Ole Miss just got punked.
Well, before the game, there was a little scrum, a brouhaha, whatever you call it, a tussle, a rustle.
It was a Lawson Schaefer fight.
Yeah. Started by Brian Tyree and Brian Tyree very cowardly wouldn't take me up on the offer to fight in person. And he told us going to the locker room pregame, he yelled back at us. He said, "I'm going to drop 30 on y'all."
That's when I knew the game was over.
Oh, yeah.
He dropped 9. Then he played Alabama in the SEC tournament, and I reminded him of it. And he dropped 6 and fouled out with 2 minutes left. That's real banner performance.
The second that you acknowledge the opposing team's fans, you lost.
That's it.
Oh, yeah.
The second you do it,
I mean, I would drop the Zach Randolph line, but I don't even know if he deserves it. You know, the bullies get bullied around here, but I don't even know if he was bullying.
If that
was
bullying, that is the worst form of bullying.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
That's terrible bullying. A bully should bully him about his bullying if that's the case. I'm just saying. That's terrible bullying. He needs to be taught how to bully.
That's right.
That is correct. But my question to you, if you were to have fought Tyree, would you have done it on the street?
Now he's doing it
in
the
octagon.
He's doing all the Crimson A and Coleman. What do you mean?
No, well, I'm saying like street fighting rules. Are we talking? Are we going to the octagon or into the boxing ring?
See,
what are we doing?
I can already tell you exactly what's going to happen. I can already tell you. Tyree would come over there. Luke would come out of the stands, and he would say, he would walk to the Crimson A, meet me here.
That's exactly,
Tyree would come over there. But Luke would get one quick one in, and then as soon as he got that one quick one in, Ole Miss is bench, like every team member would start coming over. Then all of a sudden, we are on ESPN, not top 10, for a crowd storm court.
I'm just trying to clarify the rules here of this fight.
There's no rules in the fight.
We're going full street fight here. Full street fight.
The game just gets forfeited before the game even starts. That's just all that's happening. I can already tell you that's what would happen. And I would love to have seen that.
That's great.
It would have been one heck of a fight. If I was putting Vegas odds on it, I would have been heavy on your side, Luke.
I don't know about that.
I would have been. You just picked him to win.
Did I say he would win? I said he would get the quick one in. After that quick one comes in.
Oh, you know those street fights get broken
up quick.
Those
variables come in.
The first to hit usually wins in a street fight because it gets broken up pretty quick.
I feel like Luke got a power punch to him, too. I do feel that. But I also don't know if he can dodge it, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if he got experience, you know what I'm saying? Dodging, like bobbing, weaving. Like, is he going to do him like Mayweather does? Like, he's like, ooh, miss my face. Ooh, miss his face. Or he's going to be like Pacquiao where he's just like, I'm going to eat that bit, you know? I don't know.
I do got size on my side. I'll say that.
You do have that.
Yeah,
If all else fails, just go for the quick toss or tackle. Yeah,
if it ever gets on the ground, if this ever gets like a ground.
It'd be like
pound.
Khabib against McGregor.
That's right.
It's just driving into the ground.
It's over.
Right. Yeah. It's just not even going to be close. Let's talk about.
Speaking of street fights, this Auburn team that we lost to twice. How do you feel about that, Luke?
How do you feel about
about losing to Auburn twice? Well, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. What do you want me to say?
No, but really, let's go to I'm going to talk about Bruce Pearl, and you know, he came up and he talked to you after the game. So I do want to get your thoughts on that. Maybe not the Auburn team, but Bruce Pearl and your discussion with him. What was that like for you?
Well, we've had especially towards the end of the year, encounters with opposing coaches after the game. Because after the games, I'll stay around a little bit. Maybe I'll see somebody I know and talk to them. And I'll talk to people anyways. And I'll stay around a little bit after the game. And same thing happened with Will Wade from LSU before he was suspended. Same thing happened with him. He came up and he spoke to me and he talked to me and he said, you know, I'm such a fan of yours and I love watching you at these games. I wish we had more fans like you at LSU. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome, right? Whenever you get notice from opposing coaches. And the same thing happened with Pearl. Bruce Pearl, who I don't like as a coach and the team he coaches
but
for.
As a person, he's a great human being.
Well, I don't know because I've never had any interaction with him before, but I'm sure he's a good guy. But it was a couple of us standing around there after the game and we were talking and Pearl comes up and he talks to us and he says, appreciate all y'all do for this rivalry. It's intense sometimes, but it's fun to know that you got good people off the court. And he said, thanks for all you do to promote this sport. I think that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Anytime, especially you're one of your conference rivals comes up, not biggest rivals because Auburn's not our biggest basketball rival. Or LSU, but one of your conference rivals comes up and congratulates you on being good students, being good fans. That means a lot. That means so much. That's really cool too.
It really is. I think it really speaks to what the student section has become here at the University of Alabama. It's
amazing.
People are taking notice.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how. I tell James this all the time. It's amazing to see the student section how it is now because I was here 3-4 years ago. when Avery first came here, and it was not the same. You talk about 2,500 to come see Mississippi State on a Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. The only time we could get 2,500 was when Kentucky was in town. Mm-hmm. You know, like those games, you know, we could barely get past where the entrances are, you know, mm-hmm. in that one section. We could barely get past that. So it's amazing to see just how students have bought into the program and how, like, with this new hire, they will continue to buy into the program. Right. I'm very interested to see how Oates tries to go about, you know, garnering relations with the
students.
And
he did say he wants to build those relationships with the students and really get in. And he's talked with members of the student media. Mm-hmm. He's engaged with fans already. And so I do think he will continue to build on what we've done here, and that things are only going up.
I hope soon, because it's great to have a coach that's, you know, really energetic and really excited about student support and really just jumping at it about student support that gets it. And especially someone that's accessible, and I believe that Nate Oates will be a person like that. And I really hope to get to meet with him soon. I met with him, of course, last night at the airport, but
officially
sit down and talk to Coach Oates. That'd be I'm looking very forward to a relationship between him and the students, like we hope he wants, you know, like he said he wants. I'm looking very forward to that.
Yeah, I am too. I think that I got to speak with him obviously today briefly and shake his hand, and so that of course is a good start. And now hopefully we will be able to build on that and just get a good relationship where the students feel like they're a part of the culture that we're creating with Alabama basketball. And that's something that you need to become one of the top programs. You look at all of the teams that are winning consistently, they have great
fan bases behind them. Are good.
And so I think that is really important, but something that's maybe even more important is having a roster. And we don't have much of one at this moment, so let's get into the transfer portal, all of the news that we have there.
The transfer portal has become more fun than any free agency.
Yes.
I'm sorry. It really has. It's been so much fun.
It's made it fun. It's also revolutionized, you know, especially with you see in things like we have situations like we have here at Alabama where there's a coaching change or something like that. Usually, if you were a player, you had to wait until the coach was hired and then make a decision.
Yeah,
if you want to stay or not. Now you have the portal, and you can go in. You may not come out, but you can go in. You can come out. You can go to a different place.
You gives can stay you options.
And the big thing it is you can meet legally with other teams and other coaches and hear their pitch for what they have for you. And there's no real punishment if you decide not to go with any of your new options.
Yeah.
And so that's why, particularly with Kyra Lewis, I look at this, and there's been some backlash to all of the players who have gone into the transfer portal.
And I think that's unwarranted.
And I do too, and that's here's why. These kids, guys, they're doing what's best for them.
That's right.
And when you have a coaching turnover, you don't know your future in the program. And, of course, now that Nate Oates is here, hopefully they see a future for themselves and buy into what he's selling. But during that time where you don't have a head coach, you really have no idea of if you're a part of the plans going forward. You don't know if you're going to get play time. You don't know what your future is. And so I think it's important for these guys to utilize this asset that's been put in front of them as an option where they can then go out and say, okay, I'm basically going to reset and evaluate what is the best situation for me moving forward. And so that's why I think Kyra Lewis did the right thing in entering the transfer portal and really looking at what is his best move going forward for him.
And also I want to speak on something that Nate Oates said in his press conference.
Yeah.
Some people belong in the transfer portal. You know? That's probably the best place for them. I think that's the quote of the year.
That is.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Because with the transfer portal, it gives you an opportunity of an out with your current university. And honestly, you know, some people, it's just watching what he's done at Buffalo. There are certain players that are here. I'm not going to name names for once in my life that don't fit that culture.
Trevin not naming names.
I'm not going to name names for once in my life.
It's very cowardly of you.
I'm
going to resort to the same thing.
just in case any of them want to come back, I'm going to welcome you with open arms. But, you know, some of them just the culture that he's trying to set, some of those guys are currently in there – that don't fit. They don't fit that.
Well, he shows that, you know, he's a – and he said today in his press conference, he said today, you know, he wants to create an environment of, like, where, like, you care and you love for one another and you love and care for your teammates and everyone around you, right? But he's also got that heart set to him, which I love. I love that heart set to him. He where he says, you know, like you said – maybe some people belong in the transfer portal.
Right.
Maybe they don't belong here.
Even within the team that is there, there's also some tough love that he's willing to dish out.
That's right.
He says, yes, I love my players, and I have 15 sons each season, and they change. But he also said if somebody skips class, they're going to be running sprints at 6 a.m. the next morning. That there has to be
punishment.
Which
is sleeping in late for him.
There has to be punishment. So, you know, you look at that, and I think that's something that you need. A guy who's going to be caring with the team and with the players, because that goes a long way in recruiting and building a team as the season moves on when these guys know you care. But to also have that tough love where they know that they will be held accountable for what they do. And I don't want to speak poorly on the last regime, but things did get out of hand in that locker room. They lost the locker room by the end of the season. And so I think that one of the things you've heard is, well, maybe if there were issues in the locker room, we don't need these players back. Well, not everyone in the portal was a part of those issues.
No.
And there was a lot of compounding things that were going on in that situation that can be worked out. And even in the worst of scenarios, if the right people come in and say the right things, you can work through your differences and whatever issues you may have.
Yeah.
And that's important to recognize moving forward.
Yeah, and too, you know, especially if you're a high caliber college player, high caliber athlete, former four and five star recruits like John Petty and Kyra Lewis were.
Yeah.
It's a smart move on yourself to just weigh out your options. Just see what else is out there, because you know you didn't come to Alabama and expect there to be a coaching change, right?
Right.
You didn't expect that. So it's a smart play, really, and I truly think that's what a lot of the people there in the portal right now for us are doing. They're just weighing out options until they can, you know, see what is in the foreseeable future for them. What is their future as a college athlete and eventually a pro athlete?
Yeah, and it's a perfect opportunity to weigh whether you are going to become a pro, because these coaches, they're going to – while they're selling you a pitch of their program, they're also going to be real with you on what your next step should be and how they can get you to that place. And so for these guys, obviously the dream is to go to college and then make it to the NBA. And then for some of them, maybe that like fades as they go, or some of them didn't think they were going to make it to the NBA, and now maybe it is a possibility. You like, there's guys different places on the spectrum, and to be able to go out and get real opinions on where you are in that spectrum, I think it's extremely valuable for these players as they make decisions about their lives.
So looking at who's in the transfer portal, I expect only one or two to come back, just realistically. I think Dazon's gone. Dazon's gone.
He didn't even say he was in the portal. He said he was transferring. And
I think we might get Kyra back, and then between Giddens and Petty, it's a true toss-up, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And you look at Petty, of course, and Kyra both have talked with Memphis. Kyra has a lot of interest all over the country. He's met with a number of programs today, including Nate Oates, who spoke to him first thing this morning. But I look at John Petty. John Petty is one where – we'll see. He's really one where Nate Oates is going to have his word cut out for him, convincing him that he's the right fit for his scheme and that he's going to be a part of this moving forward. Because John Petty, I don't think he wants to leave, but I think he's ready to leave if the right opportunity comes about. And, of course, that goes for anyone who's putting their name in a transfer portal, but I do think he also has connections around with other programs that he can pursue if he doesn't feel that he's a part of this program moving forward. And so now let's get off of kind of the transfers and the recruiting. We'll move on to what is this team going to look like? What do you expect from a Nate Oates basketball team moving forward?
I expect slim bodies running up the floor. That's what I expect. I expect run and gun. Have you ever seen the movie Coach Carter?
I have not.
L. Jackson. Have you seen it, Luke? All right, well, let me tell you. This is a synopsis story. It's basically Samuel L. Jackson goes to coach an inner-city school team. The first thing that he does on the first day of practice, he says, everybody get on the line and run in suicides. They run 1,000 suicides. He makes them run suicides until the third game in of the season. And the guys ask him, he says, Coach, what are we going to do? We don't have an offense. He said, yes, we do. You've been running all day. That's what I want you to do.
is
just
NATO's
run
office.
Up and down the floor.
Number one in transition points.
That's right.
That's what I expect from the team is solid defensive play. I think our defense is going to slack because as much slack as Avery got offensively, defensively he was legit. Right, his defenses were very legit. Will's going to slack on that end of the ball.
But I do think that scheme-wise, you've got some things in place that these players understand, and then Nate Oates brings that hustle mentality to the defensive end. So,
Avery just on the fly coaching-wise, he's a
in-game
savant.
Defensive
coach. He's a savant defensively.
I expect under Coach Nate Oates, I expect much of what you've seen from a and I know there's a lot of questions about it, though, like how is that going to translate to when you're playing – the top five or top six of the SEC.
Done.
Yeah, that's right.
They've been very successful with it.
That's right. But I expect to see much of what you've seen at Buffalo when he was there. Fast. And you've got guys that he said before, he likes to have four shooters on the floor.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Likes to have four shooters on the floor. He feels like if he has any less than that, you're not going to win the game.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree too. Especially the way college basketball has been trending recently.
Give me four and Galen Smith down low. Yeah, you spread the floor and he give him room to operate. Oh, he's going to work.
Yeah, I'm excited to see though because we're going to be a much different team than what we've been in the past. We're going to be especially because we've got offense now that where you see where you can see like a Kyra Lewis really tearing it up, you know, getting to the basket and get John Petty an open shot, you know, where it works out like that just naturally. I'm really going to enjoy seeing how it works out. We're going to be a very efficient offense. We're going to be a very fast offense, and all that will hopefully come a product of a good defense too.
Score on transition. You usually get back on defense because the other team is just caught off guard. So when you're scoring in transition, your defense is going to look a lot better.
Yeah, and the main thing I'm looking for is efficiency. That's the key word. I think you're going to see a lot of threes, but they're going to be good looks from three. That's something that you didn't always get with Alabama last season. They took some threes, and they didn't shoot at a high percentage, so that leads to some people – with concern about transitioning to this style of play. But I think
the quality threes we got,
when you get guys taking open threes, it's a lot different than a guy dribbling backwards with 2 seconds on the shot clock. That's a much higher percentage look when you are able to get those. And just look at Alex Reese in the last couple games of the season. When you got him
in transition,
stepping into a shot, he was knocking down everything he took. And so I think that's a lot of what you're going to see is swinging the ball around, moving that ball with a lot of pace, and just getting in, drawing in the defense, kick out, swing one more time, open threes.
Look, I just have two requests from Nate Oates. besides run them to death. I want them to run so much I lose weight. That's how much I want their team to run. All right, I want to be encouraged because I want them, the basketball players, to walk in. It's like, oh, dang, we ran 5 miles today. Really? I ran five. Man, I need to start getting in the gym myself. I just want them to run and be fast and conditioned because, number one, free throws. Nate Oates. Please get them making free throws. There's one thing in the world I want, and that's above 75% from the free throw line. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's too much to ask from a lonely college student.
Well, you know, we went as a team this past season. We went up until the end of January as I think our number was 77% from the line.
And look at what happened.
I don't
wins,
know what
wins,
happened.
Wins, 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 wins when we were shooting above 75, right? And then what happens? L's when we're not. All right. Yeah. Look, I'm just saying. 70
shooting matters.
75 is the magic number, in my opinion. You shoot 75%, you're at least getting at least 20 to 25 wins in a season.
That's right.
You shoot 75%. Mm-hmm. Free throw line. Okay. Number two, I like the slogan, but let's get rid of it. I don't want Tale of Two Halves. I want a full game.
Hey, let me tell you.
Give me a full game.
Maybe the
game.
Best quote I have heard from Nate Oates in doing my homework over the past 2 days was when he once, after a 18-point victory, went into the media room and said he was not happy with the team. And he said, we were up by 28. We should have won that game by 35 or 40,
mm-hmm.
but we took our foot off the gas pedal, and that's unacceptable. I don't think we're going to be right. blowing second-half leads anymore.
No.
Not with him at the helm. He'll check into the game himself
right.
to stop a run. I mean,
that's right. I expect, you know, I'm excited to see the energy we play with as a team. Because if you watch his Buffalo team, especially towards the end of the season, and when they're, like, in the conference tournament, and especially last year, I believe it was when they beat Kentucky, you know, if you watch those teams play, the way they play, the energy they play with, how pumped up they look to be on the court. Oh man,
yeah.
We're going to be, we got some dudes too. It's going to be fun to watch.
Look. Norfolk State said we had them beat when they came out for warm-ups. All right,
there was
a lack of energy from the players. I don't ever want to hear that statement about an Alabama team ever again, okay? And I think that's why Nate Oates is the perfect hire, because I don't think he's going to allow them to do that. I think he's going to say, before you guys ever go out there looking uninterested, you will throw a ball at a player's face to get yourself excited. That's the type of guy I want. The one who's like, you will fight before you go out there not invested in what we're doing here.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Greg Byrne, I can't say enough about him.
The
man.
Ninja.
Incredible.
The ninja.
Yeah. I can't say enough about him. He's done it before. He's done it again. All in less than a week.
Yeah.
This guy did.
I think he did it in 18 hours, to be exact.
Well,
It's less than Dan Mullins. It's less than Dan Mullins, but
– I think it was more than Dan Mullen.
I think
was the official time that they list.
It's more than Dan Mullen, but you know, we can take the efficiency.
Yeah. And not to be dramatic, I think I would trust Greg Byrne with my life.
I might, especially if he was hiring someone to protect my life.
I don't know if I'd
that's
what it is.
If
I'm in trouble, as let's say I'm president of the United States,
that's
I'm
right.
calling Greg Byrne to counter my Secret Service. He'll have the whole force done in 2 days. I'm like, all right.
That's right.
Bet, let's go. High quality guys who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I also trust him with my stock portfolio.
Before we go, that's another one. Trust him with anything, really. But before we head out today, I do want to get our Rank It segment, and we're going to go ahead and throw things to the NCAA tournament. First, let me know how your bracket looks, and then give me your final four as of today.
As of today?
Right.
All right. Well, I'll start first because my bracket is always the best. I am right on target right now, okay? My only hiccup, I was expecting Auburn to lose to Kansas.
Yeah.
That was my only hiccup. I made a mistake
nailed
on
that pick.
Yeah, I messed that up. Also, I did not expect Oregon to be in there. I picked Wisconsin. But I did pick every number one seed to be in there. That's a win. I picked mostly every number two seeds to be in there. That's a win for me. I did not predict LSU to be in there. I honestly thought they would go out against Yale.
I'm going
to
tell you.
So I put Maryland in at that spot.
Yale could have won that game, and Maryland could have won their game.
It was so frustrating because Yale.
If their best player hit a single shot. I mean, you could say that about Wofford against Kentucky too, but.
Slow down a second. Yale, like, went the entire game, went literally 38 minutes without, like, making more than one three-pointer. And then tried to turn it on in the last 2 minutes. Hey, get out here, Yale. Yale, the Ivy League. That's why we don't let them play basketball year-round.
You had a formula. You had to do was just stick to it. I hate – that's one thing I hate. When you try to deviate what's been working for you all game and you try to do something because you're just a little bit behind. You know how you stop getting from a little bit behind? You do the little things that you've been doing in the first place to get yourself in a position to be successful. Mm-hmm. Don't try and overshoot it.
I love that Maryland team. A lot of people – criticize their guard play, but if they had any guard play whatsoever, they could have made it to the Final Four with that roster. Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith both down low. I mean,
LSU is just extremely lucky that they're still in this right now.
It didn't matter what shot the guards threw up because they were getting the offensive rebound and dunking it home. Like, it was they're a duo to watch.
Virginia Tech also was a hiccup for my part. I went on a long shot here. I actually put Mississippi State playing Duke at this point right now.
Really?
I did.
Well, I can't say the same because – and I'd like to talk about my bracket. Let's talk about my bracket. I have a great bracket.
We'll do Final Fours after that.
My only hiccups in the first round were Wisconsin.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. See, I got that one. That was one of the ones I got right in the first round. I had
Wisconsin,
a rough first round.
Yeah. Wisconsin, Belmont, and Louisville. I picked the 12s to beat the 5s. I picked UC Irvine. As a man who's watched UC Irvine, I haven't watched UC Irvine. I just felt like the Anteaters. I thought they were going to win. I picked Liberty. I caught that one the first night, that Selection Sunday that night. I knew that was going to happen. Knew they were going to beat Mississippi State. My only hiccups though were like I filled out my bracket in Coleman Coliseum before the NIT game on my phone, and I got fat thumbs, right? So, I accidentally clicked Belmont instead of who they play?
Maryland.
Instead of Maryland.
And you only messed that up by two points.
That's But I'm doing great now. I'm doing great. I'd like to say that Duke Central Florida game, that Duke UCF game, that's one of the best basketball games I've ever watched.
That was an incredible basketball game. I was so happy to see my boy RJ, that had four things
to go wrong, and they only they did three of them.
To see my boy RJ get that offensive board, I was hyped. Because you know he gets no respect on that team.
But, man, there were so many opportunities. And I honestly,
I thought UCF got some bailout calls, too, to help it go along.
But, I'll agree with that. But also that call on Taco Falls was just – like he got fouled too many times. I'm sorry, they called too many on him, and I think that was on purpose.
Well, he's 7'6", right. And he's like he's got his arms over.
He can't help it.
Well, maybe he should be playing basketball.
Coach K perfectly did that where he said, "Okay, they're gonna give Zion calls, so have Zion just run into him every play.
That's right,
and eventually he'll foul out." It was perfectly done by Coach K.
I do have a hot take at the end of the game where Zion. Drove the basket, and I forget who was defending. Was it Aubrey Dawkins?
I feel like it. That should have been somebody.
He was falling down before then. That was just a defenseless player falling down. That's a hot take by me.
But I agree.
Like, his feet were shuffling and falling out from under him before.
You saw it the time before when he spun.
Yeah.
Dawkins flopped on the charge, and he tried to do it again, and then Zion kind of hesitated a little bit, and he kind of went and stumbled. Like you said,
he lost his footing. I'm in the minority that believes that was a no call. And I will take that to the grave.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But let's get into our final fours. Mine is still fully intact. I don't know about you guys, but I'm sticking with my picks. I think I've got some great ones here.
All right, what's your final four?
Well, I've got Duke.
obviously.
Of course. I'm riding with Duke. I think they're going to be the national champions. I've got Tennessee. I know that they've been scary, and they haven't looked fantastic, but I don't know how much of a threat Purdue is with one player really doing everything for them.
And then
Virginia, every year, you just wait for them to fall apart. I mean, you never know when it's going to happen, but you know it will eventually. So I'm still riding with Tennessee to the Final Four. I've got North Carolina. I think they get it done against Auburn. I think they're just more a more complete team than Auburn is. Auburn, of course, relies on the hot hand being there. And if it's not, things could get ugly against North Carolina. Looking at Texas Tech is my hot take. I've got Texas Tech into the Final Four.
It's not necessarily a hot take.
You know I believe in Chris Beard. I'm big fan of his.
Yeah.
I think they take down Michigan because Michigan's been a little up and down towards the end of the season. And then I've got maybe the hottest part of this take is Florida State over Gonzaga.
That's not that hot
I've
of a take.
I've got Florida State over. I think they're a hot team right now.
That's the most interesting
right. The only teams they've lost to in their last, I think it's 16 games or something, is Duke and North Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, they are a hot team, and they're playing really well, and they've got every kind of player that you could want. They've got point guards. They've got shooters. They've got in-between forwards, and then they've got a 7-4 center. You know, what more could you ask for?
So give me your Final Four one more time. Just straight up, give me your Final
Duke,
Four.
Duke, Tennessee, North Carolina, Texas Tech.
Okay. All right.
Honestly, for once in our lives, we are agreeing.
Really?
Wow. That is
a full
as it stands right now.
Man.
That is my Final Four. I was really sitting here. I was like, yeah, I'm looking at the right. I was like, Houston's probably going to beat Kentucky. You know I'm never big on Kentucky. Oh. I'm not that.
That's a take.
I'm never big on Kentucky. They always find a way to screw it up every year. UNC is definitely going to beat the snot out of Auburn. I'm not really worried about them. Virginia is probably going to beat Oregon. It's going to be a close one, and I trust Purdue over Tennessee, or I trust Tennessee over Purdue. Mm-hmm. The only thing I'm worried about is the fact that Purdue hasn't played a close game at all in the tournament so far. So I don't know how they're going to perform
There's
under
a
pressure.
Reason. There's a reason.
I mean, there's a reason, but
it's Carson Edwards. Yeah, that's the whole reason.
I mean, yeah, I mean that's it. But I mean, they played Old Dominion and Villanova, so you know.
Here's my Final Four one more time.
All right, so
same thing.
Same thing.
Okay, so
but I have North Carolina winning the national championship.
Right. I mean, that's a respectable opinion. I mean, they did beat them twice,
over
of course,
Duke.
Without Zion. But even
over
when
Duke.
Zion was there, 1-point loss. It's
Duke versus North Carolina.
There's
North Carolina
wins. Not a lot of separation.
Well, I've got my Final Four. I've got rematch of the ACC championship game, Duke and Florida State, first off. I think Florida State's not only going to beat Gonzaga, I think they're going to demolish Gonzaga. And they should.
We're all in agreement.
They should. This is what Gonzaga gets for not winning their conference title. Mm-hmm. This is what they get. But, yeah, I've got Florida State and Duke matching off, squaring off in the first game. Then I've got Purdue and North Carolina.
Oh, you're going Purdue.
Ooh. I'm going Purdue. I'm writing Carson Edwards here and Matt Painter.
I do. Matt Painter's
Death
done a great
Texas
job coaching.
And Matt Painter.
And then Carson Edwards, like I said, he's been hot, but I feel like that Tennessee team's too deep.
Right.
I mean, you've got five or six guys who are able to guard him.
Well, you've got, you know, Purdue is a perfect storm of everything. They got great guard play.
Right.
Then you've got a 7-3 guy down low, Matt Harms. Maybe the most punchable face in this tournament, but he's a really, really good ball player. Really good ball player. They're in your face defense. They play great offense. They got great spacing. I really like that Purdue team. Then you move on to the national championship.
Come on.
Duke and North Carolina.
There we go.
Yeah, there it is.
I've got
Tobacco Road.
North Carolina wins 79-75.
Atta baby.
All right.
Atta baby. North Carolina. Let's go Tar Heels.
As a North Carolina native, if that happens.
if anybody knows, he should.
If that happens, I will drive back Monday afternoon to North Carolina to be at an area bar to watch that game. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I think it will be great. But we're out of time for today. Thanks again for joining us. We look forward to it every time. And
thank you so much for coming.
Yeah,
it makes it anything more interesting.
Guys, this is a great podcast. I love doing it. I love anytime I get a chance to come, like, talk hoops for an hour.
Right.
I'm jumping right at it.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Of course. And we love having you in here. Thanks again to all of our listeners throughout the season for joining us. We want to wish you all a great off season and Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.